8:01 on a Monday. Happy Monday, everybody. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. Halford Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience a Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour three of the program. Kevin Woodley from NHL.com and InGoal Magazine is going to join us in a moment here to kick off hour three. Hour three is brought to you by Campbell & Pound Real Estate Appraisers. Trust the expertise of Campbell & Pound. Visit them on the internet at campbell-pound.com today.
We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sorfeet, what are you waiting for?
Kintec. He is a presentation of, wait for it, White Rock Hyundai. Yes. Kevin Woodley joins us now on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. What up, Woods?
I think your producer should be cueing the applause button. You nailed it.
I have to take a pause and take a breath, and that's fine because it gives more emphasis to the sponsor. But I struggle with White Rock on its own, never mind throwing in Hyundai at the end of it.
You almost, when you're reading it, it's almost like you intentionally take a break. Your lips are moving right now as you're like rehearsing it. So you almost go like, okay, I know how to say white. I'm going to say white. Okay, I know how to say rock.
It would
I'm
be
say
easier.
Rock, and I know how to say Hyundai, and then you go White Walk Hyundai.
It'd be easier if they, White Walk.
It would be easier if they just named the place White Walk.
Yeah,
it would save me a lot of effort. Anyway, how you doing, Kev?
I'm good. I'm coming to you from beautiful South Surrey because I don't actually live in White Rock, but
you're split.
What can I say?
You're splitting hairs.
What do they say? White Rock is not having to say you're Surrey?
Yeah. And having to say South Surrey says a lot, too. Kev, Thatcher Demko, how many games do you think he's going to play? Do you think he's going to just play in Calgary, or do you think he'll play in Calgary and Winnipeg?
It's actually a really good question, and I think the answer may depend a lot on how it goes in Calgary or against Calgary tomorrow. My hunch is both, but, you know, to be honest, my hunch was always both to the point where I never asked. So that's sort of the default here. I haven't, you know, you guys know I don't like to blow smoke, and I haven't asked that question. My hunch was both. The one caveat would be, you know, if they don't need the game in Winnipeg, if they leave a whole bunch of other guys behind, you know, we talked about the need to maybe hopefully get into a couple and sort of get your timing and your rhythm and sort of back into the chaos of game situations with 10 bodies flying around and trying to find that puck. I still think there's probably enough value in playing the Winnipeg game, even if it isn't with regulars. But certainly, if you don't put in the effort in front of them, it's really hard for a goaltender to sort of make the reads he would make in a normal situation if guys aren't doing what they're supposed to do or they would normally do when the playoffs start, you know, are probably next Monday. So, I guess there is the potential to maybe not play both, but my expectation has always been that he would play both games.
What does it tell you about the injury that Thatcher Demko said that they were always, pretty much from day one of the injury, targeting the Calgary game, and they have had to work pretty hard to get to this point?
Well, you know, earlier in that scrum, Ian McIntyre asked a question about whether he always knew he was coming back, and they always targeted it, but they weren't always sure that it would happen, or at least he wasn't. Like, he's ahead of schedule, as Rick Tocchet said. And by ahead of schedule, I don't just mean, like, he could have maybe played Saturday when they were targeting Tuesday. Like, you know, I don't know that we appreciate the amount of work that Thatcher has put into his body over the past year. And he sort of hinted at the work that went into this rehab, you know, and credited the medical staff for being there for him to, like, you know, two-a-day sessions to make sure that he would be ready for this game tomorrow against Calgary. So I don't know that you can, because it would be really easy to say, oh, well, they always knew. But I'm not sure that every goalie's coming back. Let's just say I'm not sure every goalie is back by now. There was a lot of work done, and it's a credit in part to Thatcher's determination and the work he's put in over the past year that he was able to recover from an injury that I think other guys would have been out for yet another couple of weeks recovering from.
So, Kev, take everything into account. Are you able to tell Canucks fans that it's going to be okay?
I mean, listen, there's never been more volatility in the position. there are no absolutes. It's what I love about it. There are no absolutes in goaltending. Every guy can do it differently and have varying degrees of success. But yeah, I feel pretty good about this. You know, I don't know if that's enough, guys, mm-hmm. but I feel really good about this. I've watched him for the past week, and he is flying out there. You know, all the moves, and there's a lot of stress on the body in Ian Clark's system and the way they play. There's an explosion to the way Thatcher Demko plays it, to the way he moves. That I've used the phrase before, it almost borders on violence, how quickly he moves around the crease, the pace with which he slams into his posts and comes off them. The amount the posts move, they literally will pop up like 2-3 inches every time he integrates and pops off. Like there's a lot to it. And mm-hmm. it asks a lot of the body, and he is going through it like it's nothing right now. And that doesn't mean it's not nothing, doesn't mean he's not feeling it. But when I talked to him, even after the scrum the other day, like he feels really good. He looks really good. And now it's just a matter of getting the game reps so he's comfortable when they drop the puck in the postseason.
Let's move on to some of the other goaltending stories around the NHL. It's hard to ignore the numbers that Georgiev has had in Colorado in the last little bit. He was only in there for 15 minutes against the Winnipeg Jets on Saturday. He allowed 4 goals. He allowed 4 goals again in a 4-3 OT loss to Vegas on Sunday. He's playing a lot, and as of late, he's not playing particularly well. Considering that he's going to go up against probably the Vezina Trophy winner in Connor Hellebuck for the Winnipeg Jets. How much could the goaltending story swing that series?
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's not just lately, right? Outside of a really hot stretch at the start, and then again, I would argue, although, you know, the pushback would be, well, what does it matter what they did in November to now? But they just played, you know, and I'm sure he'd say this, it's not all about this, but man, they just kept going to that well. They literally played the wheels off the guy, and it just feels like he hasn't been able to get them back on. He's underwater for the season. He's you know, negative .6 expected save percentage in a decent environment, not great defensively, but decent. That's 55th out of 72 qualifying goalies in the National Hockey League this year. That is not the type of numbers that you would normally attach to Stanley Cup contenders. Although, when they won the Cup, let's not forget, like, Darcy Kuemper wasn't exactly at his peak powers in the playoffs, especially after the eye injury. And they basically, I don't say despite, but goaltending wasn't the reason they won a Stanley Cup. I mean, by the time they got to the clinching game, that was a team that looked like it felt they couldn't give up a single scoring chance. And, oh, by the way, they didn't. Like, I think it was 1 in the decisive game. They may end up having a decision to make. Eustace Annenen is 5th in the National Hockey League in a very tiny sample and against limited opponents. And this is the part that confuses me a little. I know they need to, they feel like it's Georgiev, and I understand that because I covered their playoff series last year against Seattle in person, and it wasn't him. He wasn't the problem. He was great. He was great as a number one last year. So I understand why they feel it has to be him. But, man, I would have liked to have seen Annenen against some of this upper-level competition and not just coming off the bench after the game's pretty much decided to sort of figure out, like, you know, is this an option we can go to? Because the way it's – like, I feel like they keep trying to, like, give Georgiev a chance to sort of rediscover his form. And, man, it just – it's not working right now. So that becomes a really interesting – dilemma and potential storyline for the Stanley Cup playoffs. I've always believed in Georgiev and his abilities. Back to when he was in New York, he was a guy I thought could be a number one. He was last year. It just has not gone the same this year, and it's hard to ignore at this point.
How many alerts do you have going on back there?
Yeah, my apologies. I had to turn it off. I'm sorry. It's actually the last. I'm going to tell you, like, the last several were Thomas Drantz, so there you go.
Drantzer, stop texting Woodley.
He was just reacting to J-Pat, so there we go.
You're
got
wrong.
A little group
you're wrong.
Chat going.
You're wrong.
I have a question that has nothing to do with Drantz or the incessant pinging of your telephone. The Boston Bruins have gone back and forth almost the last 3 months between Swayman and Ullmark. Will they have the guts, Kev, the guts to keep doing it in the playoffs?
Yes. I do believe they will. It's about time. I think everybody crapped all over the Minnesota Wild for doing it last year.
Yep.
And because Fleury didn't deliver, right?
Yep.
Like,
yep.
It made sense to me. It made perfect sense to me for two reasons. One, they'd done it down the stretch, and Fleury had delivered. But there's a little thing, and Fleury delivered a lot this season for them too, by the way. Like, his numbers are really good. If he wants to come back, I actually don't think it's going to be in Minnesota based on what I understand of what they've told other people in their depth chart what it'll look like. So that becomes interesting. But in pressure moments, in playoff moments, there's a little bit of old flower that comes back, and he didn't deliver in that moment, but it didn't mean it was the wrong call, especially considering fitness was an issue for Gustafson last year. So if it's worked all season, why the hell would you feel you need to go away from it in the playoffs just because you need a number one? It's never made sense to me. I get it if you have a number one, but if you got two, just go back and forth, because every goalie will tell you they want to play every game, but what's the next best thing? Every second game. The win and you're in crap, all it does is add another layer of pressure to a position that's already packed with it. So I think the Bruins are finally going to be the team. I think they realized last year, hey, we played Allmark like half the season, and then all of a sudden in the playoffs we played them every second day, and guess what? That didn't work. Probably in hindsight they would have liked to have done it differently. I think there's a few teams over the years that would have liked to have done it differently. Vegas, when they had Fleury and Lehner.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think you'll see that with Boston finally this year. And maybe this is because I've been saying this should happen for years for a lot of teams. I'm just excited about the possibility. So I kind of hope the Bruins finally prove me right and go on a long run back and forth.
Is it going to be a sizable goaltending mismatch in favor of the Florida Panthers against the Toronto Maple Leafs?
It depends who starts.
They should go back and forth too.
It depends who starts in both cases.
So who would you advocate for each team to get the start, and who do you think they will?
Well, I'm not an idiot. Like, Sergei Bobrovsky has a track record, and look what he did in the playoffs last year. But if I was going purely on numbers this season, Anthony Stolarz is one of the top goalies statistically in the National Hockey League, and Bob ranks in the 20s. And if we're looking at the Leafs, Joseph Woll is one spot behind Anthony Stolarz in the top three in adjusted save percentage, and I can't find anyone else on the chart. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's not even close. I know, you know, those numbers are obviously clouded for Samsonov by the start he had to the season. He's been better of late.
Mm-hmm.
But when you actually sort of filter for shot quality, not that much better. Like, Woll has outperformed him. I know he doesn't have a track record. He hasn't done it. He hasn't been in the playoffs before, and he hasn't really got his wheels under him since coming off of the injury. There's another one where, in terms of deployment, I would have been playing him more. They kept giving him the toughest games, and then when the games didn't go well, it was like a justification to not go back to him. But the reality was, he was still outperforming the environment significantly at a time when Samsonov has just basically hovered right around expected. Like, I'm not saying you start Anthony Stolarz ahead of Sergei Bobrovsky, but if things don't go well, I'm curious to see how short the leash is, because there's another guy that's been really good, exceptional down the stretch. And in Toronto's case, I believe I know exactly who their top goalie is and their goalie of the future is. I'm just not sure he's going to start game one.
We're speaking to Kevin Woodley from NHL.com and Ingold Magazine here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. I want to go back to the two-goalie platoon thing, because, I mean, you just said you're not stupid. You're not. You know exactly what the issue is when you get into the playoffs, is that you have to announce your starter. Every decision becomes...
Do you?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm going to ask. Do you just say at the beginning of the playoffs, like, we're going to alternate back and forth? But and then if you do, do you have to stick with it? Do you have to be married to it? Or can you just be like, we're just going to take it game by game and see how it goes? Like, that's the issue that I think a lot of coaches, quite frankly, don't want to deal with, is that it's always a choice and it's always an option. And those are the decisions that fairly or unfairly can get you a lot of scrutiny, maybe from your boss. And I remember distinctly Lindy Ruff, when he was coaching the Dallas Stars, and at a certain point he was like, you know, I'm sick and tired of talking about our two-goalie system. And I was like, that's why coaches don't want to do it right there.
Well, and they're risk-adverse, right? Like, you're right, because if they make a decision, that's why nobody's done this, right? Like, there's been plenty of cases where you could make a very strong argument the smart move was to go back and forth, at least more so than they were. And they won't, because they're risk-adverse and because of the spotlight that comes with it. But
they should have the courage of the baseball managers who go in there and be like, this guy's having a great start, you're coming out. You're coming over, and then everyone rips them, right? Does like, Greg and Alex, that's why the coaches
Greg
are
Alex
too scared.
Seen as you say that, as a Jays fan.
Yeah, he's
just shaking his head sadly right now. Yeah.
I don't know what you guys talking about.
I understand why it hasn't happened. You know, even on the Fleury thing last year. Listen, like, I know why they made the decision, and it had as much to do with Gustafson and multiple overtimes in Dallas,
yeah,
which is one of the hottest, toughest buildings in the league. And, hey, I just happened to watch Gustafson, like, blow chunks on the bench here in Vancouver after a particularly hard morning skate. Like, fitness was not his forte last season. It was okay. One of the things they sent him home to work on. And yet, even then, because Fleury didn't perform when he got in the net, people ripped them for the decision and mocked, like, openly mocked the concept of using both goalies,
right,
because it didn't work in that instance. So it is a brave decision. It is a tough one to make. But you could make the same argument that Boston blew their first-round series last year because of their unwillingness to stick with something that worked all season. So I don't see why we can't apply the same critiques to the decision not to, and Boston's an extreme example. Mm-hmm. So, and I think a lot of people, here's the interesting thing, a lot of people are like, oh, well, they're going to start Swayman, aren't they? Because he's been better. And when I look at it, it's like, statistically, actually, he hasn't. It's been Ullmark on adjusted save percentage, and in the last little while, you know, tilting the scales on the season by a pretty good margin. One's 11th in the league, the other's 24th. So even if they were to pick one, I do think you could find things like matchups, depending on sort of how it goes, what types of attacks the other team is able to generate against you. You could make an argument, you know, that one guy is better at certain things than the other. I don't know that you want to justify that publicly, but you could just say, hey, there are things we like against this opponent that we think Linus is better than, or we think Jeremy is better than. Half the time, I'm not sure head coaches understand that anyways, but, you know, to me, I don't see why that's so hard. Even if I fully understand, you know, the risk involved for a head coach, because it's so easy to criticize it when it doesn't go well, to the point where, you know, when it doesn't go well because you didn't do it, gets ignored. When it doesn't go well because you did do it, you get absolutely blasted.
Kev, this was great, man. Thanks for taking the time to do it. We appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of the week. We'll do this again, and when we do it next time, it'll be playoff time.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to this. Can I just apologize to everyone for the rain that's coming in Vancouver today?
Oh.
It's my fault. I washed all three White Rock Hyundais. See, I can say that. I washed all three of them yesterday, and now it's raining today. So it's my fault, folks. I apologize.
It's good for the lawns.
Yeah. Folks, you know where to draw your collective ire. Thanks, Kev. Appreciate it, bud.
See you, buddy.
Take care, guys.
Kevin Woodley on Sportsnet 650, brought to you by White Rock Hyundai. Visit the showroom on King George in White Rock or whiterockhyundai.com.
He's got three Hyundais?
He's just hoarding them.
It's apparently.
It was a humble brag and a half.
It was.
Yeah.
Okay.
I got to wash my three Hyundais. Oh, cool.
A humble brag would have been like, I took them to the dealership and they washed them for me.
That's true, actually, yeah.
I digress.
You should have been like, oh, yeah, Delari takes care of that for me.
You wash your own car.
You just send a guy to the house. It's awesome.
Yeah.
You wash your own car.
That's embarrassing, Kev.
Let's
do some What We Learns.
We need to do the Masters. So we are 2 hours and 19 minutes into the show, and we have not discussed the greatest living golfer, active golfer, winning his second Masters. So he's the fourth youngest Scottie Scheffler ever to win two Masters. It's always this great weekend on the calendar. It was a quintessential performance, and yet we have spent 2 hours and 20 minutes talking everything but Masters.
Plus Tiger Woods shook hands with the tree.
I'm going to be dead honest. The Tiger Woods tree meme was maybe the most interesting thing for me that came out of that entire
That was awesome.
Go, Jason. What you learned about the Masters?
What I learned about the Masters is that even though Halford thinks Scottie Scheffler is boring, Scottie Scheffler is playing like one of the best golfers ever. Like, his run that he's on right now is incredibly impressive. And as a guy that just likes watching golf, like, I'm not sitting here and saying, like, I was on the edge of my seat at the end of the Masters yesterday, because it was, you know, it was a little anticlimactic. The weekend was very entertaining. The course was playing very difficult. There were a lot of good players that missed the cut. There were a lot of good players that put up some big numbers, especially on Saturday. you know, our very own Adam Hadwin had an 82 and Tiger Woods had an 82. And then Sunday, Scottie Scheffler just pulled away from the group, whether it was Max Homa or Oberg or Schauffele or whoever was up there on the leaderboard early on. Mm-hmm. Scheffler just showed his quality. And I get that he's not as psychologically interesting as a guy like Tiger Woods, or kind of on the opposite spectrum, maybe a Phil Mickelson. He is a guy that he just seems like a pretty good guy. You know, like he's very humble. Now, let's not pretend that we know these guys, but he keeps a very even keel. He says he goes home and, you know, golf isn't the number one thing for him, and he surrounds himself with people that, you know, keep him grounded. But what he's doing on the golf course is incredible. He has won a bunch of tournaments lately, mm-hmm. including the Players, including Arnie's tournament, and then he goes into the Masters as the favorite and wins it rather easily. This is a guy that has now been the number one golfer for 83 straight weeks. Number one golfer in the world for 83 weeks. And actually, I don't think that's straight, but like it's 83 weeks. So he's getting up there with like the greats. Like, now, granted, they only started charting number one in the world in 1986. And Tiger had, you know, 683 weeks at the top, and Greg Norman had over 300 weeks. But the only names after those two are Dustin Johnson, Rory McIlroy, Nick Faldo, and then it's Scottie Scheffler. Like, he has spent that much time as the world's best golfer. Some people might push back and say, yeah, but a bunch of the really good guys went to live. You cannot push back on how well this guy is playing. I don't think he has a weakness in his game. And I was confident all of yesterday. I was like, Scottie Scheffler's going to win this. No problem. Mm-hmm. The only thing that might keep Scottie Scheffler from winning this is if his wife goes into labor. That's the number one threat to his title this year.
Yeah. So someone just texted in. I think this is very important to point out, and it'll set me off on the tangent that I wanted to go off on. It wasn't that Scottie Scheffler is boring. It's that the rest of the field couldn't keep up and make it competitive. I think that as someone who observes golf purely from a casual standpoint, but also is intrigued more by the stories and the drama, golf is lacking it almost entirely right now, because the majority of the drama is coming from the PGA versus LIV. And to be honest, once you get past the verbal barbs and the jousting, following the rivalry between PGA and LIV is really sort of soul-sucking, because it's almost exclusively about money. There's nothing really there other than a bunch of guys arguing and fighting about money. There's nothing soulful about it. No one's fighting for anything other than a big pot or a big bag of money at the end mm-hmm. of it, right? Like, John Rahm's decision to go to LIV wasn't out of some nobility to grow another league. It was that they put $300 million.
Did you watch any of the Masters this weekend?
Yeah,
Because the story wasn't LIV at all.
What I'm saying is the only drama that golf has right now is the PGA versus LIV, because it's not on tour.
I 1,000% disagree with that.
Oh, yeah? What was the most dramatic thing from this weekend?
It was Scottie Scheffler playing like he's unbelievable.
What was the drama?
Well, was there drama when Tiger Woods was dominating tournaments? Was there drama when he was lapping the field? The Open was like, can't we have an appreciation for what Scottie Scheffler? I would understand if some guy came out of nowhere and won the tournament by like six strokes, and there was no drama on Sunday, and he was just some guy. But this is just something, like, I just feel like we should start appreciating what Scottie Scheffler is doing. And so, like, I kind of flipped this weekend. Like, he went into this tournament as the favorite, and he did things that Tiger did when Tiger was at his, like, he just intimidated people. Everyone else fell off. Mm-hmm. Everyone else made the big mistake. And Scottie Scheffler was just like, I'm not gonna.
So then what?
You don't think there's that's impressive to watch?
It is, but it wasn't impressive to watch.
Okay. That's fine.
I mean, you can't tell me that
I'm not going to tell you what's going to be interesting to you, but I'm also going to acknowledge that you're not a hardcore golf fan. So,
do you think I'm often saying that was uninteresting yesterday and not compelling television?
What's that?
Are you think I'm off in saying that wasn't interesting and it wasn't compelling to watch yesterday?
No, that's your opinion. It wasn't for me because I was compelled by how impressive Scottie Scheffler was. That's what was compelling to me. If it was just some guy that had, you know, pulled away and then the last 10 holes were like, oh, what, you know, this guy's going to win the Masters. Like, oh, Charles Schwartzel is going to win the Masters. Like that one. I'd kind of be like, yeah, it was a little bit boring. But I think what I'm saying is Scottie Scheffler has reached the point where he's so good that I think we should appreciate his greatness.
I'll end it with this, is that I'm not trying to project anything on golf in terms of analysis because I know that I'm a very novice golf fan at best. What I will say is that I am a vast consumer of media, and I spent a good 2 hours yesterday watching and reading everything, and I saw pundits across the board having a hard time trying to come up with what the compelling angle was about the whole thing. And I saw people, talking heads at a desk.
Well, they should hire me then, because then I think I would be sitting there and going, guys, like, let's try not to make Scottie Scheffler into Tiger Woods, or let's stop trying to reach for these you know, storylines that we would attribute to Tiger. Let's just appreciate how well this guy is playing
and
right
maybe
now. Sell that.
And maybe that's what they have to do. But I saw more people, driving in this morning, talking about, will Tiger ever win another major? Or was Tiger finishing last after making the cut the biggest story at the Masters? And there is a Tiger vacuum for sure, and it's gone on since. And I mean, Godfrey, I'm not the one to try and figure out how they go about fixing that. Maybe you can. Maybe it's just that he was that profound a figure in golf that it's going to take a long time before that chapter's closed. But you just kind of felt like everyone was struggling to come up with what the story was yesterday. And you said it pretty well. The story was right in front of everyone. It's that the most dominant golfer on the planet right now dominated everybody.
And I guess a lot of people just aren't buying that story, or it's just not interesting enough for them. And fair enough, that's your opinion. I guess I just appreciate people a little more than others.
That's
I'm such a good person.
He is. At the end of the day, it's about Jason being a
good person. Give me Moo Cow on that. So get your What We Learns into the Dunbar Lumber text line at 650-650. Little tease for Halford's What We Learned. Speaking of anticlimactic, if that's what you thought that Sunday's Masters round was, what's the end of the title race in England going to be like?
Yesterday didn't help.
Man City had a pretty good day, pretty good weekend.
Yesterday didn't help.
Yeah. You're listening to the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Vic Nizar. Have your say and join me on The People's Show with big takes and even bigger bets weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now for my favorite part of the show. What did I say? Talk to the audience. Oh, God, this is always dead.
It's What We Learn time. It's What We Learn time. It's What We Learn time. On the show.
8:35 on a Monday. Happy Monday, everybody. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. Halford and Brough in the Morning is brought to you by the Dallari family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dallari difference today by visiting your nearest Dallari Acura dealer today. We are in hour three of the program. Jason is furiously arguing with some dude in the Dunbar Lumber text message in basket. Hour three is brought to you by Campbell and Pound Real Estate Appraisers. Trust the expertise of Campbell and Pound. Visit them on the internet at campbell-pound.com today. All right. How are we doing over there? We're good? You with me?
You crying, Jason?
You with me?
Oh, I'm with you. I'm just having fun with the texters.
Texter, singular, yeah. First and foremost.
It's the same guy who texts in about basic stats and then acts like he's reinvented, like, sports talk as we see it.
It's also the same guy that we said we weren't going to engage.
I know. But you know what I usually do? Engaged? Like, I usually block him for a week.
I know. You didn't do it this time.
Well, I just did block him. And the thing that's really funny about our blocking mechanism, and you know what's the funny thing? Most of the time, you don't get blocked for saying something really insulting or anything. Like, you don't, because it's like, whatever.
We get too much of that.
You get blocked if you keep texting in over and over and over again. So, like, 30, 40. And it's the same with my social media. Like, people are like, you blocked me because you can't handle, like, my takes. And I'm like, no, I blocked you because you're annoying.
Yeah. It's not
right? Like, it's annoying that I constantly, like, I want to have, like, I want people that reply to me that are funny or, you know, like, the people that I would enjoy conversing with, right? Or
insightful.
Insightful. But then there are some people that are just, like, incessant. They're like the type of people that would be like, I'm going to call a girl. Oh, she's not picking up. Going to call her again. Oh, not picking up.
I don't know if you got my last voicemail there, but I'm going to leave this one just in case. Maybe you're answering.
Yeah. Just a couple DMs, too. I don't know if you saw them.
Yeah. Like, it's not that.
Send
you know,
a carrier pigeon, not sure if it arrived.
Yeah.
But it is the back and forth, right? Like, it's part of sport. Like, with a debate we were having about golf, we were going back and forth, right? And then the listeners and the texters, they want to get in. They want to do the back and forth.
But it's the one-word texter guys, too, that get to me. Like, you know, you could form a sentence or even a paragraph
as
opposed to texting in one word at a time.
Yeah.
Okay.
I want to read some texts here because our conversation about Scotty Scheffler at the Masters, it must have been great sports talk because people were really engaged on both sides. So here,
hold
I'm going to...
Let's print out some of these first. Let's do that. Fire up the dot matrix. What We Learned, Humanoid Edition, is brought to you by Get Fire Plan. Protect what matters most with comprehensive fire safety plans. Monthly audits and risk mitigation at $200 off. Visit them at getfireplan.com.
Oh my God, we're having a fire plan.
Go ahead, Jason.
Okay, I'm going to read the text that's in support of me, Jason Bruff. Unsigned, literally had to pull over and grab my phone to send a text to say how much I agree with Bruff and how out to lunch Halford is, especially the point about when Tiger dominated. It was the most compelling watch television, but because it's Scotty Scheffler, it's not the same thing. Ridiculous. The story of this Masters was how brilliant Scotty Scheffler is, how dominating he was, and I absolutely loved watching the Masters. Plus, it was the most beautiful course on the most beautiful day. Mike is so out to lunch.
And this is the, I'm not joking, this is the very next text.
Blocked.
This is the very next text that came in. Bruff is 1,000,000% wrong on his take. Tiger had drama all the time with his wanting to win so bad. Tiger vision, also how rude he was to everyone on tour because he was so dialed in. The prostitutes didn't see that coming. His dad... The comeback, wow, so wrong, Bruff. We did a good job.
It's a very divided inbox right now.
Here's the kicker, everyone. I don't even care. You're all dancing. No, but seriously. You can already, look, I will, if it means angering up the blood of the listeners, because I did not find the weekend compelling, so be it. I am more than willing to take your abuse, people calling me stupid and idiot. Kudos to the one guy that pulled over to text. I respect your safety and you appreciating the rules of the road.
Mm-hmm.
Most
people just voice to text and it's all over the map.
That's right. Who's Halpern? Anyway, here's
Lynn
the thing.
Holmes?
I think the important thing to understand here is that I get what Bruff is talking about. And in certain facets, I agree. I understand that this became a very... black, white, yes, no, A versus or B kind of discussion and debate. But in a lot of ways, the point he's trying to make is that the dominance that Scheffler is putting on display is the kind of dominance we haven't seen since Tiger Woods was doing it. So for me to say this lacks the drama and the intrigue of the Tiger Woods era might be inherently wrong because Scheffler's out there doing it, at least on the course.
all I was saying, and I said this many times, is your opinion is your opinion. Yeah. I'm not going to tell anyone what was compelling to them.
However,
like there is no listen, there's no question that Scottie Scheffler does not have the appeal of Tiger Woods. I mean, it's just period. To me, though, what I'm trying to say is that this weekend was a bit of a turning point for me. It was a bit of a turning point for me because I started to see Scottie Scheffler in just a bit of a different light. Because when you start coming into these tournaments, these majors, and you're a favorite to win, mm-hmm. and then you show up and you do the things that Tiger used to do, in that he would show up to these tournaments, he'd be the favorite, and then he'd play well, and then he would keep playing well. Like, the pressure wouldn't get to him, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what Scottie Scheffler did in this tournament, and that's what he's done for the last little while. What I'm saying is maybe we should start looking at Scottie Scheffler in a bit of a different way, because what he's doing is very, very impressive. I'm not dumb. I watch the Golf Channel a lot, and I see these guys desperate to make storylines out of everything, right? The attention that Tiger Woods still gets, you know? And it was great that he made the cut, but his body is not to the point where, especially at Augusta, where it's a really tough walk, like, it's hard for him to stay healthy.
Yeah.
And the fact that he had to play 23 holes on Friday probably didn't help him. And then Saturday he blows up and has an 82. I get where golf is. What I'm saying is that maybe we should start to appreciate Scottie Scheffler a little bit more for what he's done recently, because you can't just say forever Scottie Scheffler's not interesting. If Scottie Scheffler goes on and wins, like, you know, the next six Masters or the next six majors, what if he wins three majors? Are you still bored by him? If he wins the next major and then the next major after that, are you still saying, yeah, he's boring? I mean, maybe.
I'm bored by golf.
Maybe he needs, like, does he need a vice? Does Scottie Scheffler need a vice?
A rival? Something?
It's boring. You're boring, everybody. Quit boring everyone.
I think Scottie Scheffler loves it that everyone thinks he's boring. He's like, perfect. I'll get less attention. I'm just going to go home and enjoy my life.
Eat some ice cream.
Yeah.
Have my baby.
Golf needs a happy Gilmore. Is that what you want?
I don't know what I want, to be honest. And I mean, this could just be the way that it goes, right? This just could be it's a sport where it can be very much dictated by, especially since the Tiger era, very much dictated by one guy. I've noticed that. Like, remember, everyone was quick to anoint for a very short time. Bryson DeChambeau, remember that brief era where everyone was like, is this the next thing? Is this the next thing? I do think there's that element of it, that everyone's waiting for the next thing to kind of emerge. Maybe it is Scheffler. I don't know. Speaking of boring, let's turn our attention to the English Premier League, because it was a very, very vital Sunday for the team that just got to watch everyone else crumble around them. City watched Liverpool lose at Anfield to Palace. And then Arsenal did Arsenal things. They lost 2-0. Late goals to Villa. So in the span of, I guess, 4 or 5 hours on a Sunday morning, City watched their title chances increase exponentially, and now they've got a chance to do the treble, which is always fun. I'm saying this with – it's a sense of resignment for me, because remember, every time you ask me, you're like, what do you think is going to happen with the Premier League? And I just kind of sit there for a moment quietly, and then I'm like, City's probably going to win the whole thing. I mean, if you want to talk about boring, I'll apply the Scottie Scheffler thing. It is – a very, very hollow feeling, that this sense of, you know, finality is always that the richest team that buys the best players is probably going to end up winning at the end.
Yeah, but still, I mean, Arsenal losing to Villa, you're kind of like, all right, well, Aston Villa is a pretty good team.
They're playing great this year. Aspirations for Champions League football.
Liverpool losing to Palace.
That's bad. That was tough.
Jurgen was clopping mad after that one.
That's why he's the best, everybody.
I actually had that written out last week.
Clopping mad.
And I never got to use it.
Okay, we're gonna let's just pivot off. I think between the golf talk and then the Premiership talk, I think we should probably focus back on the Canucks.
We should do the Andy what we learned.
Andy what we learned. What's your what we learned, Andy?
This will have some good discussion, I think. Okay.
You're throwing me on the spot here. Okay, it's actually more of just a headline that made me laugh that Greg shared with me.
Let's do it.
Lonely Ape, the NFT dating service, was canceled due to a lack of women. So there's this NFT dating site, or there was, for a bunch of crypto bros called Lonely Ape, you know, based off of the ape NFTs. And
it's almost a skit at this point.
And it had to close down because it was just a bunch of crypto bros and no women, which I guess, you know, you kind of need both.
Who thought that was a good idea?
What if we do NFTs but for dating?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, the NFT dating site, and they had to close it due to lack of female.
Did they do 2 seconds of research into their demographics of who owns NFTs?
Do you remember the brief?
It reminds me of the sex chat thing from The Simpsons where it's just a bunch of guys and they're all like, are you a beautiful woman? Do I sound like a beautiful woman? Remember? It's like,
Mo was there,
Krusty,
wasn't he?
Yeah, Krusty and Mo and Apu talking to each other. That's exactly what it's just, yeah.
They were bored apes and now they're lonely.
Did I tell you guys about the sad conversation I heard in Vegas when I was down there? And it was a very quick conversation because it came in the elevator. And two guys walked in and one guy was bragging about all the money he was making on marijuana stocks. And I was like, whatever, this is just typical Vegas. And this other guy goes, and I really started crying on the elevator. He goes, you know, I had heard about all this crypto stuff. So a couple months ago, I was like, I'm going to get into this crypto stuff. And I have $400. I'm going to put it into crypto. And I was like, okay, let's see where this goes. And then he goes, and there was like no shame about it. He was like, you know what? Turned out to be a scam.
What?
I gave my money, $400. I gave it. And then like I just couldn't get my money back. I'm like, are you just Googling like where put money crypto, right?
I
like,
put my money in the Bitcoin machine and never gave it back.
Yeah.
You click one of those Twitter ads. What? Didn't work?
And I'm like, why am I not in the business of scamming people?
Yeah. Yep.
Right? Do you ever actually think that? Like, if you had no morals, how much like money you could make? If you had no sense of shame, how much money you could make?
Well, with all the scam phone calls, God, the texts you get every day, like, you're just like, man, there must be enough people out there falling for this that it warrants this amount of attention from people.
Yeah, and then those guys literally walked on the casino floor and like, well, maybe the slot machines will be better for me.
Yeah. This time.
What does that tell you?
Yeah, here we're wasting time talking about Scottie Scheffler.
Yo, bro, did you hear that Lonely Ape closed down? What a freak. I spent thousands of bucks there. I gave my credit card and everything.
A couple other ones to pass along. Congrats to the Canadian women for defeating the U.S. in the Women's World Hockey Championship.
That was going
to
be my what we learned.
Oh, okay. Why don't you just do it right now?
Well, it's too late now. You just said it.
Well, I just stole the lead.
Danielle Sardakny with the overtime winner.
There you go.
Her brother, former Salmon Arm Silverback.
Well, Marie-Philippe Poulin, friend of the show.
Former Halford and Bruff guest, Pooh, they call her. Marie-Philippe Poulin.
She's just clutch. What else? How else do you can describe
Captain
it?
Clutch.
Yeah.
Also, in local news, because the owner is from Vancouver, kudos to Wrexham. Welcome to Wrexham, Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhinney's team in the formerly of League Two in England, now on their way up to League One, which is actually the third level. You know what? I'm not going to explain it. It gets really confusing.
We don't have time.
Point being, Wrexham has been promoted 2 years on the trot, so kudos to Wrexham.
Plop with what we learned.
Good old Plop.
Good old Plop. I'm kind of tired of hearing about finding the quote-unquote right wingers for Pettersson. Aren't elite players supposed to make the players around them better? I may be off my rocker here, writes Plop.
So he's not talking not the actual RW right winger.
Finding the correct wingers for Pettersson.
Yeah. Maybe a better way to say that, Plop.
But watching the game, Pettersson looks slow and seems to be more of a drag than a boost, just not feeling the EP40 vibes like I did in years past. Yeah, I think we've seen some life from Pettersson over the last few games, and it was nice to see him score that power play goal the other day against Arizona, but yeah, he's still not at the level we've seen him before. And I think that's just the fair way to put it. You know, overall, he's going to have almost 90 points on the season, which is great. But a lot of that was done earlier in the season when he was playing at a pretty high level. Mm-hmm. And just, he's not trending well right now. And it seems like, I think here's my conclusion. If he's going to be a dominant player in the playoffs for the Canucks, can we all agree, guys, can we all agree, yeah, so it's not just me on an island here, can we all agree that if Pettersson is a dominating player in the playoffs, he will have to make a big leap from where he is at right now?
Well, yeah, because he's not doing anything
right now. I don't know. Going on a limb there, bruv.
Yeah.
No, but there are some people that push back, and they're just like, oh, look at his point totals. Like, he's still great value. But I'm like, yeah, but not right now. And it's very important that heading into the playoffs that the Canucks are firing on all cylinders.
If he underperforms in the playoffs and the Canucks go out with a whimper, I'm not saying either of these things will happen, but if they happen,
I just put it out there.
That is all that the people will talk about. That's all Canucks fans will talk about all summer leading into the next season. It'll once again be all about Pettersson.
Here's a curveball for you. What if he sort of middles through and they win this opening round?
Oh, then it's fine.
You think it's fine?
Well, more or less. You'll still get the people chirping about it, but it won't be as big of a deal. It's all about if the Canucks win or not.
I will say this, like going back to the good old days and the things that worked and sort of reconnecting all the lines when the Canucks were cooking, albeit with Lindholm as the new Bluger. Bluger is the old Lindholm, whatever. I do wonder if it could be a really balanced approach that sees them through, and they do it with depth of scoring, good goaltending from Demko, and then you don't necessarily need that production. I mean, eventually you're going to. That's the thing. If you're going to go on a deep playoff run, your 1C is going to have to step up and play, because eventually you're going to get into that while you're going up against, I mean, go through the West.
But if he's just fine won't be this crazy amount of noise. There'll be noise if he underperforms or is invisible.
It'll be a different kind of noise.
Yes.
Okay.
There's still a lot of texts coming in about Scottie Scheffler versus Tiger Woods. Rick in Richmond, the biggest difference between Scheffler and Woods is that Scottie is easy to cheer for and Woods isn't. I've been baffled that so many put Woods on a pedestal when he's not a very nice person. Rick in Richmond, have you noticed the world? It's always not the nice people that people cheer for.
Yeah. They're called villains. Some of them. And people. Yeah,
some people just like they want to cheer for the people that winning is all that matters, and they're obsessed with winning, and I don't care what they're like outside of it. Many people say that, you know? We're hearing it more and more.
I don't know what you're talking about. I don't even know who you're talking about. Well, look at the time. We got to get out of here for a Monday. We will be back tomorrow. It's Canucks game day tomorrow. Two games left in the regular season before the playoffs get underway. Signing off on a Monday, I have been Mike Halford. He's been Jason Bruff. He's been A-Dog, and he's been Laddie. This has been the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650.